You hear the term naloxone in the news a fair amount of late. It is not quite a miracle drug, but its ability to help people recover from drug overdose is impressive. And with many drug abusers turning from harder-to-get prescription painkillers to heroin, drug overdoses seem to happen more. Naloxone can save the victims if given in time. The HIV Alliance in Eugene has added naloxone to its toolkit, offering the drug and directions in its correct use in a number of venues, including the recent Douglas County Fair. We can explore this with Amanda McCluskey, who is the HIV Alliance Program Director. Thank you for joining us, Amanda.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Give us some background, if you would, on the HIV Alliance, how long it's been around and what some of its major goals are.
Sure. We've been around since 1999 in Lane County. And then over the years, we've had the good fortune to be able to expand to 13 counties in Western Oregon. We provide care for people living with HIV, so we do medical case management, and then we provide prevention services to help prevent new infections.
So the prevention of infection is where naloxone seems to come in with the multiple transmission pathways of HIV. Are you basically trying to cover all those pathways, all those bases?
Yeah, that's correct. We have needle exchange programs in Southern Oregon and in Lane County, and so we distribute naloxone primarily through our needle exchange program. The studies have shown that, you know, getting it in the hands of folks who are injecting and are there when their friends are injecting is the best way to really prevent those overdoses.
So the naloxone is going directly into the hands of people who might do the overdosing or have people around them who do.
Yeah, correct. You know, we've been distributing it to community members as well. But really, you know, we're really trying to hone down on those folks who might be there when someone is overdosing.
So let's talk about things like needle exchanges, because they were certainly controversial at one time. I wonder if they still get a fair amount of static from the public.
Yeah, you know, we do see that from time to time. It tends to be one of those things that if you spend some time talking to someone and explaining how cost-effective it is and how effective of an intervention it is, usually people are smart, people understand, okay, you know, this isn't my favorite thing in the world, but I see how well this works. I mean, I think for us here, you know, we wish we lived in a world where needle exchange and naloxone weren't things that are needed in the community, but right now they are needed, and so we're really happy to be able to provide that and prevent all those new infections. We estimate that our needle exchange programs prevent, you know, between 75 and 100 new cases of HIV every year, and those cases each can cost between $500,000 to $1 million over a lifetime.
Wow. Okay. I was going to ask you about the cost-effective part of it, but there it is, $500,000 to $1 million over the course of a lifetime of treatment.
Right.
So I want to get back into some of the real nitty-gritty here, but I mean, because the problem with needles is not that you use your own again, but that you use somebody else's. Is that it? And that's where the infections can be transmitted?
Right. That's where the sort of danger is sharing needles. So sharing needles, you know, between groups of people who are injecting is a very effective way to transmit HIV and other diseases such as hepatitis C. So if folks are injecting but using their own needles, you know, clean needles every time, new needles every time, then that risk is pretty well eliminated. We just really don't see new infections in that community really anymore. It's such an effective intervention. Needle exchange is so effective that really it makes a huge difference. And people are, you know, the clients we have, they're very happy to use new needles. They would much rather not share. So it's super effective.
So this is part of an overall approach of harm reduction, which I've heard about before. But can you flesh out the principles a bit there for us?
Sure. So harm reduction is, you know, sort of like it says, just reducing the harm of an activity. So if folks use new needles but continue to inject, then they're going to reduce the harm of injecting drugs. So that can be the harm of contracting HIV or hepatitis C. It can also be preventing abscesses. The new needles that we give out, you know, using new needles and new supplies each time prevents abscesses too. And those abscesses can be really costly. They can use up emergency services. So, you know, we're preventing the harm that way. And then we find that, you know, when people start to take small steps toward positive behavior change, then that can put them on a pathway to continue to make positive changes in their behavior. So sometimes we do see folks who, you know, they become comfortable with us, they get comfortable working with social services, and then they'll let us know, hey, you know, I'm feeling like I'm ready to start looking at treatment, or I'd really like to stop using. What's my next step? So we do find that it, you know, our goal really is to prevent the spread of HIV. But if folks are interested in accessing drug treatment and moving along that path of behavior change, we are so happy to support that.
So no judgment applied on any of the activities that can lead to the spread of HIV, but support to make sure that there's as little harm as possible. And as a side benefit, if people get interested in stopping to doing the risky things, that's great.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I really love about this agency is our dedication to non-judgment. You know, we want to meet people where they're at and support them in making the good choices that they want to make for themselves.
We are talking to Amanda McCluskey at the HIV Alliance based in Eugene. She's the program director there. You can join the conversation on the exchange about harm reduction and naloxone distribution and information. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. So how long ago did the HIV Alliance get involved in naloxone distribution?
You know, we've been doing this for just about a year, almost exactly a year now. We've distributed around over 200 kits in Southern Oregon, naloxone kits. So our kits come with two doses. We find, you know, depending on the severity of a person's overdose, it may take two and sometimes more doses to pull them out of that overdose. So that's why we give out two in every kit.
You know, I remember talking to somebody about naloxone and its use a while ago. I thought that you can't use this when somebody's no longer breathing, but it was pointed out to me actually you can if you can at least get this stuff into their bodies.
Yeah, that's correct. When we do the training, the first step we always recommend, you know, call 911, start rescue breathing for the person if they're not breathing, and then administer the naloxone. So yeah, if a person is not breathing, you know, if they're turning gray or blue, you can absolutely, that's the appropriate time to administer naloxone. And the interesting thing about it is that it is it's a very benign medication. So even if a person actually, it turns out they were not overdosing on opiates, it's harmless to give it to them. So it's really worth giving them the naloxone. It's not going to hurt them either way, but it has the potential to really, really save their life.
Well, so this is not at all like, you know, if anybody's thinking this is like that famous scene in Pulp Fiction where they inject the adrenaline into Uma Thurman's heart when she's having an overdose. Not like that at all, evidently.
No, not like that at all. We do hear that from time to time in many of the trainings. People bring that up. But yeah, no, it's actually pretty, it's very easy to administer it. We give out two kinds, so you can inject it directly into a muscle. And the other kind that we give is actually a nasal spray. So it's not quite, you know, stabbing it into somebody's heart. But
okay.
the part where she comes out of it and she is not happy and doesn't feel good, that is accurate. When it immediately puts a person into withdrawal. So when they do regain consciousness, they can be vomiting, they can be feeling very sick, very uncomfortable, very angry.
That part I hadn't thought about. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, I've heard the mechanism. It blocks the opioid receptors in the brain, and so if the opioid is not getting to the places that it needs to take care of, that is withdrawal by definition.
Yeah, intense and immediate withdrawal for folks. So it's really not pleasant. It's not something that, that we found that people really... It's not something that people really want to experience. It's better than dying from a drug overdose, but it's not a pleasant experience
at all. So, Amanda, was there much discussion at the HIV Alliance before starting on naloxone distribution? I mean, is overdose recovery something of a side issue to the main mission?
Yeah, this is something that our needle exchange clients have been asking for years. Whenever there's something that's appropriate to our different populations that would be helpful for them, we really try and facilitate getting that to them. So this was something we had heard from that population for a long time, that they were interested in getting naloxone. So once we were able to secure a funding source for it, we were very excited to start purchasing that. You know, we also needed, the Senate bill was passed that allowed for the allowed for us to train folks and to distribute naloxone. So we needed that piece too. But that's been great. We have the Good Samaritan law that allows for folks to carry naloxone and distribute it without worrying about liability. And then there's also a piece of that if one of our folks who is someone who uses opiates or other drugs, uses naloxone to save the life of a friend, when emergency services show up, you know, if there are warrants or outstanding things like that, those won't be addressed at that time. So that gives the person who is, saving that person from their overdose, gives them a little bit of protection from having to deal with.
So I see a couple of legal protections had to be lined up to make people feel like they were freer to use it.
Yes, correct.
Amanda McCluskey is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the program director of the HIV Alliance based in Eugene. And we're talking most specifically about the naloxone distribution program that the Alliance has been doing for about a year now. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Your thoughts on naloxone and its use and its increased use clearly in society today. 800-838-3760 to join by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So how and where do you distribute the naloxone, the kits?
Yeah, we do a couple of different things. So we primarily do it through our needle exchange sites. So we have a needle exchange site in Roseburg, and we have one in Grants Pass. And then we're also partnering with the Medford Jackson County needle exchange program. So we're distributing naloxone about weekly at the needle exchange the county runs there. We also do some different community events. We've been partnering with a local group called Max's Mission, and that was founded by some folks who had family members who died from drug overdoses. So we partner with them to provide naloxone. They do a great job providing really good information, and we provide the naloxone. That goes to community members and folks who are injecting drugs as well. And then we also do some partnerships with other places. I just recently did a training at a treatment center in Roseburg for their staff, since they have folks who come in who might be using. And we know that if a person is accessing drug treatment, that can be a really risky time for overdose. If somebody suffers a relapse, that can be a time when their tolerance is low, so they can be more likely to overdose.
And how does it get to you? I mean, how do you acquire all these kits of naloxone?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have agreements with the public health directors in each of the counties that we do this in, and we're able to order the naloxone through those agreements.
So it's at public expense then?
No, it's paid for through a grant, actually, that we got through the Attorney General's office. So the Attorney General had a settlement with a drug manufacturer, and they used the funds from that settlement to go toward overdose prevention. So that's the majority of the funding. We've also had some support from the different counties here and there, and other grants, but primarily from that settlement through the Attorney General's office.
So that sounds like a time-limited thing.
Yeah, that piece is, you know, and we've been, with a lot of our programs, it goes that way. We get some startup money, and then we start looking at, okay, how else can we keep this going, because this is important to the community. And in this case, it's definitely important to the community. So we've been looking at different grants. We just got one that I think is going to keep us going for a little while.
What does each particular kit cost? Each two dose kit.
Let's see. Each kit is about it's about $20 mm-hmm. per kit. The prices on the different components of the kits fluctuate. But with that kit comes the two doses of naloxone, two syringes for injecting alcohol swabs, two rescue breathing masks, and a small sharps container.
Okay, so everything to use and then dispose of correctly as well.
That's right, and we do refills. We ask people to, you know, if they've used their kit, to bring it back. We collect data around if they prevented an overdose or if something else happened. And we found, you know, within the first week that we started distributing these kits, we had reversed an overdose.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Within the
yeah.
first week, wow.
Yeah.
And so what? How many kits have been put out there in this year since you started doing this? And is that enough, you perceived, for the need in the counties you serve?
In Southern Oregon, we've given out just over 200 kits program-wide. If you include Lane County, I think we're closer to 400 kits total. I don't think it's I don't think we've hit the saturation point. We would like to continue to get that, grow that number, get that bigger, find more places to give out naloxone to folks who need it. And we're hoping, you know, that we can see through the epidemiological data that we'll start to see drug overdose deaths decrease over time.
Which and the heroin deaths in particular in Oregon had peaked a couple of years ago. Have they stayed high?
Yeah. You know, I don't know that there's been any new data published since then. So I think we're still at a high, but we're hoping within the next round of data that's published that'll start to decrease. But it is high, you know, and we are really seeing a heroin epidemic at all of our needle exchange sites. All of our needle exchange numbers are way up. You know, and we're happy that people are coming to us and that they're exchanging, so that, you know, even if we have more people using heroin, we're not seeing more HIV cases, mm-hmm. new HIV cases. But we really are seeing an increase in heroin use.
And is that largely, you think, because of the fact that it is getting harder over time to get the prescription painkillers, the opioids?
Anecdotally, that's what we're hearing from our clients. We're hearing a lot of folks who, you know, started with a prescription and then were, you know, tapered off of that prescription, but continued to be addicted to the opiates. And heroin is, what we're hearing is heroin is cheaper than buying, you know, the opiates, the prescription medications on the black market, that heroin is actually cheaper, so people are moving to heroin.
Is the quality, does it vary greatly on the streets? I mean, I wonder if that's part of the reason for the overdose incidents, that that just people don't know quite what they're getting.
Absolutely. It is not controlled or regulated, and it really varies. And that's really the scary part. You know, we really encourage people to do what's called like a test shot or a test hit, where they inject a small amount first, just to make sure that they know what they're getting into before they inject, you know, what would be a normal dose for them.
Now, I noticed, Amanda, you had the HIV Alliance out at the Douglas County Fair, I guess last week, talking about a naloxone. Were you actually giving kits out there too?
Yeah, we were really excited to do that. Yes, we did that. We were tabling with some of the folks we work with over at Douglas County, and we were really excited to be invited to join them. They've been a great partner with us, and it was great. We gave out a number of kits. We had our nasal kits and our injectable kits. We were able to train people on the spot and get them the kits so that they could use them and help save a life.
I can imagine there were a lot of questions. So I was like, well, what happens if I try to help somebody and they die or something? So were you able to? Did people ask that question a lot? First of all,
yeah, people will ask all kinds of questions, but yeah, people do ask that, you know, what happens if I start helping and then the person dies, you know, and of course, like I said, with that Good Samaritan law, you know, the person would not be liable for trying to help. Other questions that we get, though, are things like, you know, can you get high off of naloxone? And you absolutely can't. Is it safe? Is it something that, if I inject into somebody who's not actually overdosing, am I going to do them harm? And it is safe, and it won't do a person harm if they're overdosing, or if they're actually not overdosing on opiates.
Mm-hmm.
And then other questions we get too is like, will it be effective if a person is overdosing on, say, meth, or if they have alcohol poisoning? And in those cases, it wouldn't reverse. It does not reverse a meth overdose or an alcohol overdose. It's strictly opiates. But you know, sometimes people mix, and so if somebody is overdosing on a mixture of opiates and meth, or opiates and alcohol, or all three, it will at least help for the part related to the opiate, and that can be enough for that person to start breathing again.
All right, but this is the first time I'm hearing that it sometimes takes more than one dose to get somebody to come back from an overdose of opiates or opioids.
Correct, yeah, and especially like you were speaking of in the cases where you don't necessarily know what you're getting. So if a person did get a particularly strong batch, then we've heard reports of people needing 4 or 5 doses.
Really, that many?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it does happen, especially with some of the, you know, the newer synthetic like fentanyl and things like that are out there.
You know, I get the approach here. The HIV Alliance, obviously, your major goal is to stop the spread of HIV and other diseases that can be spread through shared needles, through sexual transmission, that sort of thing. But is it hard sometimes when you get off into naloxone and stuff to keep your eyes on the original set of goals?
Yeah, you know, I think every nonprofit worries about that a little bit with mission drift. You know, is usually sort of the jargon that you hear around that. You know, and whenever we take on a new project, we really think about that critically. Like, is this pulling us away from our key mission? Is this distracting us from the work that our core work that we do and our core values? And in this case, we felt like this was something that was so important to this community and important to keeping them healthy that we really wanted to provide that and to be able to support this community in that way.
Is the work of the Alliance something like a series of waves, though? You feel like you got one set of circumstances handled, and then another wave comes along and gives you something new you got to deal with?
Yes, all the time. Yeah, it does feel like that. And I think, you know, we do a really good job here of looking for new opportunities and new ways to serve the community and new ways to prevent new infections and new ways to support people living with HIV and people at risk for HIV. So we are constantly finding new projects and starting up new programs. So it does just feel like it feels like a moving target sometimes, but it's also great. It's never a dull day around here. It is an exciting place to work.
I can imagine that. So the 13 counties, they extend down to Coos and Curry counties, for example?
Correct. Yeah, we go on most of the coast. We have Clatsop as well, all the way north.
Okay.
But yeah, Coos and Curry, Douglas, Lane, so that whole coast bit in Southern Oregon, and then Josephine, Jackson, Klamath, and Lake counties as well.
Okay, so pretty much all the area we serve as well. So if people want to know about things like needle exchanges and naloxone distribution, should they contact would the county health departments know what they're talking about and be able to help them?
Yeah, you know, the county health department's a great place to start. You can also call us. You can go to our website at hivalliance.org. You can call us at 541-342-5088. I'm always happy to answer questions and chat with people about services they need.
What was that number again? 541?
342-5088.
Okay, and hivalliance.org.
Org,
okay. Yeah. Amanda McCluskey is the program director of the HIV Alliance based in Eugene, serving counties all over Western Oregon. Thanks so much for joining us today to talk about naloxone and needle exchanges.